What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Two Woke Nerds podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Guys, if you like what we do, it would mean a lot if you would share this with a friend wherever you find it, whether it's on iTunes or Stitcher or the Twitter or the blog. Share it with a friend. Share it with somebody you like that you think would enjoy us. Also, send us an email at twowokenerdspod@gmail.com. I will literally read anything that comes across as long as it will not get us an explicit tag. So send us an email, tweet at us. We have some good interaction on Twitter going right now, so tweet at us. We will respond. We're pretty responsive. Raymond and I really don't do our day jobs, so it's good to have a good conversation with listeners. But guys, this week I am joined, like I am every week, by my good friend, my very own Vanilla Bear, a man who has seen the Planet of the Apes and survived, Raymond Summerlin. Ray, how are you doing, bud?
So there was talk last week that I would have to walk back yet another movie. Famously, saw the trailer for Arrival, thought it was going to be terrible, finally watched Arrival, really good, walked it back, got that one wrong. Thought the same thing was going to happen for Apes, but as it turns out, I am not wrong. All of the critics are wrong. Apes is this year's Avatar, and what I mean by that is it is a very well done and pretty movie that is also the most generic thing that you have ever seen in your entire life. If you think that this movie is in any way interesting or thought-provoking, that means you have never seen a movie before in your life. It is just the most generic. You've never read the Bible. Like, you've never heard a story told. Like, it is unbelievably generic and predictable and boring. But it's pretty, and it was acted pretty well, so I guess that means you get to be 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm kind of getting to the tipping point with Rotten Tomatoes. I'm kind of there. Like, and it's so important now for movies. Like, it drives movies' revenue so much now, and it just doesn't seem like critics know what they're talking about, us included, for the most part.
Absolutely, and calling us critics, first off, is kind of a loose use of that term.
I'm a critic in everyday life. When I go to the store, I'm a critic.
Are you being critical, or are you a critic? We can split those hairs later. But guys, this week we've got a lot to talk about. So we got the first episode of Game of Thrones, which Raymond has been just waiting, aching to discuss on the air. We got a second trailer for Blade Runner 2049, and D23 was this past weekend. We got some big news from Marvel and Star Wars, and we're going to talk about all of it today. But let's start with a quick dive on Game of Thrones. We got the season premiere this weekend. A lot of moving pieces. I love this short season because they're just like, hey, we can't have these filler episodes anymore. So we kicked it off with some action. So we're just going to hit two big themes, right? What did you think your big theme, what was the big thing from this week?
The women are taking over, man. And I was worried with one of the trailers. I thought that Sansa was going to lose her agency again and kind of get pushed off the side again by Littlefinger. That is definitely not going to happen. That line that she said to him, which Lord Baelish, you don't fight for the last word, Lord Baelish. I'll just assume it was something clever. That line, just amazing. Arya literally killed off a bloodline. Literally. She literally killed off a bloodline. Sansa is channeling her inner Queen of Thorns throughout the entire thing. Lyanna Mormont putting all of those old lords in their place.
That's fantastic.
It was wonderful. Ultimately, though, you know, Sansa was shot down by Jon in front of everyone, although she probably was right, by the way. You've seen your family, who you think is your father, try to be this upstanding lord in this time of turmoil, and he lost his head. And you saw who you think is your brother do the same thing, and you know that didn't turn out so well for him. So I think that she was right. But yeah, that's my big thing. I'm so happy to see it, and I think that maybe this was where they were going all along, which makes all of the kind of hand wringing about especially what happened to Sansa in the past seasons makes all of that seem a little bit short sighted, because I think that this is ultimately where we were going.
Absolutely, and that's kind of what I was talking about. The scene with Arya and the switch where you're like, oh, wait, yeah, Walder Frey's dead. Like, what's happening here? Was just fantastic. And Bran, come on, dude. Like, I think Bran has now officially ruined the world. Like, bringing his connection with the Night King across the wall. Like, yeah. Like, dude, you have officially ended the entire world. But my other thing is, like, it's so funny seeing people in this world doubt Arya's ability to kill folk, because we've seen her kill so many people in so many fun and creative ways. So seeing someone laugh at her saying she's going to kill the queen, like that line, the people in the show think it's hilarious, and we're like, oh, so I guess that's how that's going to happen. I guess that's how Cersei's going to die, because anybody that Arya to this point has said she's going to kill has died at her hand.
Or ended up dead before she could get there. So those are the only options. A couple more quick things. I don't know what they were doing with Euron. I'm not sure how many hot topics are in between the Iron Islands and King's Landing.
At least six.
He hit every single one of them. Like, he looks like he's in like cosplay as a member of the Clash. So I'm not sure exactly. I'm not exactly sure what he was doing. And also ice giants.
Giants.
There are giants who are also whites. That can't be good. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that that's not going to turn out well for our protagonists.
That probably will go poorly. I can definitely say.
I'm going to go out on an end.
And you know, I think it's all going to hinge on the what's the scientific term? Metric crap ton of dragon glass below Dragonstone. I think that's going to play a pretty big point. I'm glad you know, through all the vomit and feces our favorite maester in training had to go through, that we found out that there is a metric crap ton.
I watched that in we watched the first season with a couple of people. And two people had to get up and leave. They couldn't handle that scene. Of all the things we've seen on Game of Thrones, the thing that made people get up and we saw a giant World's Strongest Man contestant pop another guy's head as if it was a boil, and the people couldn't handle the cleaning out the bedpans. That's what got everybody to go, no, that is too much. That is beyond the pale. It was unbelievable.
Sympathetic vomiting is a real thing. But moving on for Game of Thrones, we are not a Game of Thrones podcast, but moving on, we got out of nowhere, no fanfare, no pomp, just boom, landed on the internet yesterday at the time of recording. We got a trailer for Blade Runner 2049. Not a ton of new footage, but we got a couple of interesting things in the trailer. So Ray, what did you were able to glean from this trailer?
You said it. There's not much more. Leto is very clearly the bad guy. They expanded on him a lot, and he's very clearly the baddie. That girl is very clearly his kind of replicant bodyguard and right-hand woman, so we got that. But the big thing, the big line that I'm pretty sure wasn't in the first one, but it's definitely in the second trailer, Deckard, Harrison Ford, says, "We were being hunted," which on its own might seem like a innocuous line, but it suggests something that people have suspected for, 30 years now since the first movie came out, and also something that I'm pretty sure Ridley Scott at this point has confirmed, and that is that Deckard is in fact a replicant. So that's a bit of a bombshell to just, maybe they didn't recognize what they were doing, but to just release that in a trailer, that's a little bit of a bombshell.
Well, it's hard to believe that Villeneuve doesn't know what he's doing at this point. After everything that he's done, you know, in his career, I feel like that's on purpose. And it may be a misdirect. It may be just him talking about being on the run with a replicant at the end of the first film.
Yeah.
But Ridley Scott has confirmed. I believe the director's cut is a little less subtle about Deckard's replicantness. If you rewatch that, you know, the final ultimate cut that Ridley Scott released.
The origami is very important. You should watch that.
Yeah, if you haven't rewatched it recently, check it out. But my thing is, there's a line in there from Jared Leto about he's the key or something along those lines, basically indicating that either the Gosling or Deckard is the key to him being able to mass produce replicants, because that's kind of his big thing, is he's not able to produce them fast enough to change the world. And so that's my thing is, you know, I think there's obviously going to be a twist at the end, because, you know, there's not really a movie of this caliber without a twist anymore. And it's going to have something to do with, I think, Ryan Gosling actually being, maybe he is a replicant and he's working for Jared Leto to bring Harrison Ford, Deckard in, because Deckard's the key to mass producing for some reason, because he's really the only replicant that survived long enough to age. You know, they have that rapid aging thing, and they, you know, they're, he's the only functional replicant that still exists, for lack of a better term. So that to me is an interesting thing to see.
Or maybe Bautista is. It seems like he definitely has superhuman strength, and he has aged as well. So maybe there's something going on there. I also think that I'm not sure that we're being hunted. That's the line that's being taken out of this. I'm not necessarily sure that means that he's definitely a replicant. There certainly was some in the interim 30 years between Blade Runner and this movie. Something terrible has happened. From all of the things we see of Vegas and of what looks like Russia and all of those things that we've seen, there something bad happened on this earth. LA hasn't really apparently didn't hit LA, but something bad has happened. And I wouldn't be surprised if we were being hunted is humans were being hunted from an uprising of some kind, a replicant uprising of some kind. So I'm interested. I'm interested in where that's going, but I agree with you. I think that line was put in there on purpose, knowing that fanboys would catch it. And it's going to be kind of interesting to see where they go from that. But I mean, the movie looks cool. And ultimately I'm all for cool looking movies. So I'm in on this one for sure. Oh, by the way, there was a featurette released last month called Time to Live, which I had just found when I was looking up the trailer on YouTube. And it was more interesting than the trailer. And I would recommend that for sure.
Yeah, Don't Sleep. It's an early Don't Sleep for you guys. So we had the pleasure of not going to D23 this weekend. We got to see some footage on the internet and some even some not footage, some descriptions of footage. So D23, if you're not aware, is Disney's big biannual fan festival that they do. And at D23... generally, there's big news about Disney properties, and we got some really cool things. Basically, Westworld for Star Wars was announced, which at some point in my life, I will go to that. If I have to, sell paired appendages, I will end up there. But the big stuff that we're concerned about is there was a Marvel panel, and there was a Star Wars panel. And at the Marvel panel, we got the first images and footage from Avengers Infinity War. And so they haven't released it to the public, but literally anybody who was there has put up a description online, and it's kind of a showstopper. So in person, we got to see Brolin, who's been working out. Clearly, he's taking playing Cable and Thanos both very seriously.
Yes, his name is now officially Josh Swollen. That is obviously, that is what he is jacked up, dude.
Yeah. So gotta be big for Cable. That's definitely his Cable look, especially with the shaved sides of the head.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's leaning into Cable. But so the footage we got opens with the Guardians flying on the Milano, which again is still my favorite joke of anything that's happened in the MCU. And they're flying through, and Thor hits their windshield.
I always thought that was a bit prejudiced for a cookie.
Oh man, Scrubs reference. No, so Thor hits the windshield. So that's how Thor ends up back with everybody, come to find out. It's supposed to pick up right at the end of Ragnarok. So Thor ends up with the Guardians on the Milano.
And by the way, that suggests that things don't end so well for Hemsworth the Greater at the end of Ragnarok.
No, he's basically floating in space by himself.
That seems like a big spoiler for a movie that comes out in, 4 months?
Yeah, for sure. It's a pretty big spoiler. But there are also questions like, what happens to Hulk?
Yeah.
What happens to the planet?
Hulk.
What happens to Asgard?
Yeah.
What happens to Hela? There's still a lot of mystery out there. But
we know what happens to Hela. She joins Euron at the local Iron Islands Hot Topic.
She gives him eyeshadow lessons. No, so, we have some kind of big flash scenes. You see Doctor Strange and Star-Lord together taking on some threats. But the big show-stopping moment, we finally got an image of what Thanos can do. And so I've read it described in several different ways. But basically, he kind of gestures out into space, blows up a planet, somehow moves it to Earth in the blink of an eye, and starts dropping it on our heroes.
He throws a moon. He throws it.
Yeah.
Like you would a baseball in the backyard.
This is a big deal.
So how are you supposed to fight that?
That's a fantastic question.
Old boy just threw a moon. I'm backing out.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm
Kimbo
gone.
Slice would have been scared if someone throws a moon.
Well,
like, what do you do?
Speaking of Kimbo Slice, you got Steve Rogers sporting a deep beard. He's finally had to abandon the classic Marvel disguise. So Ray, you've chimed in a little bit, but you've read the description. So what does this do for you as far as hype for Infinity War, and what are you hoping to see as we move forward?
Well, I hope that they don't have a Superman problem on their hands with Thanos. I hope that that they can figure out a kind of ridiculous way to be able to fight him. You know, it wasn't much. It was just some interesting ideas, like the Wakandan army's fighting and Bucky's a part of it, which basically confirms what we've all thought about Black Panther, is that Bucky was going to play a role somewhere in Black Panther. So that's pretty much, I think, bang on confirmed now. So there's the Spidey sense. We see Spider-Man has started. He has that suit that we saw at the end of Homecoming. He's starting to realize that Spidey sense happens. He's starting to realize his powers. So that's interesting. But, you know, all of that's just kind of like icing on the cake of what we're really looking at. And you're right, it's Thanos. Talk to me about the Black Horde a little bit. As if you've never listened to the podcast, I'm not a comic book reader. I don't really read them. But Gerald is. He's the comic book expert here. And I'd never really heard about the Black Horde and what they were. So tell me a little bit about them.
Yeah, so the Black Order is basically a group of aliens. It's a common theme in comic books. You know, this big cosmic threat has their minions that are kind of their forebearers. You know, they go and they try to subjugate planets in their name. You know, you've got the Four Horsemen of Apocalypse. You know, you've got that's the big one that we can draw an analogy to. But basically, there's some lethal aliens that that accompany Thanos to do his bidding, and they go and subjugate planets before he gets there, and they force the inhabitants to kind of worship and pay tribute to Thanos as part of what they do. And I think
so. They're kind of like the Ginyu Squad.
Exactly, they're exactly like the Ginyu Squad,
They don't have any poses.
They don't have any poses. No. I mean, but granted, they're comic book characters, so poses will probably happen. What I'm honestly thinking are going to happen is this is just my brain spinning, and I may be spinning too much, but I think that Gamora and Nebula were supposed to be part of the Black Order.
Yeah.
You know, Thanos raised them and trained them, in martial combat and in very ruthless way. So I think, you know, in the MCU pantheon, they may have been, he was supposed to lead the Black Order for him, you know, as his daughters, they lead his heralds to the planets that he's going to subjugate. So I think that could be an interesting theme, you know, if they go that way. But it's just another threat for these heroes, you know, something the likes of they've never seen. These are basically, five mini Thanos. Thani? Would be Thani? Thanos?
It would definitely be Thani, yeah.
Thani? Thanisi? Yeah. There are five mini Thanoses Thanisi. for the Avengers to take on. I had some gelato at Thanisi. They're kind of the heralds of Thanos, and so they're very lethal. They're very they're very potent, and it's a big challenge for our heroes to overcome. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. The only thing I'm looking forward to is somebody leak that footage. How has it been like 4 days and no one's leaked the footage? How is that possible?
Turn in your cell phones.
That's unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable that footage isn't out there yet.
Bro, Disney is like insane.
They are insane because they're making Westworld for real.
For realsies.
They're making Westworld for... So we'll just move to Star Wars part of this.
Yes. So moving on to sci-fi.
They are making Westworld for real. They're doing that. That's... First of all, we will be there. Obviously.
At some point, yes.
We will have a bros weekend at Westworld Star Wars. No, that didn't work. Star Westworld? No. Anyway, we will be there for sure. We will be there for sure. But it doesn't seem like a good idea, does it?
I mean, we've seen this in several different narratives that this is going to go poorly for everyone involved.
I can't remember. Where else?
well, the Westworld film, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So. This is basically also the plot of Jurassic Park.
Sure, but, like, we're not dealing with, like, dinosaurs and killer robots. Like, we're dealing with just, like, cosplay enthusiasts and masters of fine arts majors from whatever universities in Orlando. The USF Masters of Fine Arts graduates are students. That's all we're dealing with here. Which, maybe they're violent, I don't know. There's a lot of meth in Florida. But I think that, I don't think it's as bad as dinosaurs and robots.
Well, it's real to me, dang it. No, but the big news, outside of Star Wars land at Disney, Star Westworld, I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, there's something there. I can't quite make it work in my head.
We'll come back
I'll
to it next
week. I'll ruminate on it. Yeah, give
yeah we'll think about it. That'll be Ray's Don't Sleep. So we got almost 3 minutes of behind-the-scenes footage of Star Wars Episode VIII, The Last Jedi. And I love these behind-the-scenes things because they kind of drop some big hints in them. So, Ray, you know, obviously I'm the bigger Star Wars fan, but you Absolutely. Are a pretty big Star Wars fan as well. You like what's going on. So what did you think? What did you get from this 3 minute look into the production of Star Wars?
All the feels when Carrie Fisher was there with Hamill dancing, all the mm-hmm. feels. Benicio del Toro? Like, did yeah. we know that?
We knew that. We still don't know his character, but we knew that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So I saw him, like, I thought he was randomly filming a Heineken commercial. I didn't really know why he was there. But yeah, so he's in there. It was really interesting to me how complimentary everybody was of Rian Johnson, which is a large departure from literally every other movie that they've had so far in the reboot, that they haven't had really any, you know, hiccups, any problems. And so that's interesting. That kind of leads me to believe that, you know, he really knows what he's doing. And so that's interesting to me. And that was about it. I didn't really take much out of it. I thought it was an interesting look behind the scenes. There's some cool kind of, like, that speeder, that Batmobile speeder. That was mm-hmm. pretty cool to see. But yeah, other than that, I didn't take much out of it. I thought it was fun to watch.
Yeah, the thing that caught me off guard was not off guard, but struck me was John Boyega's comment of, you know, he talked about how Rian just kind of gets it, and he's Daisy Ridley talked about how he's made a story that is unexpected but makes sense for Star Wars, which, you know, two people that, you know, are admittedly huge fans, like John Boyega is a Star Wars collector, if you don't know that. So the fact that he's so high on this director is a big deal for me. But we see a lot of interesting things that could hit two plot points that I want to hit, and I've got them divided.
Can I ask you a question first?
Go ahead. Yeah,
is the surprise that they just remade Empire Strikes Back?
I don't think so.
Is that the surprise he's talking about?
I hope not. I hope. Now, they obviously are definitely going for an Empire Strikes Back ground assault. Like, we've seen that. Like, yeah. the Red Planet, definitely.
Yeah, Rian of Tarth is involved blowing up a rebel base somehow.
Yeah, so I've got it divided up into four things. So you got Rey and Luke on Octo, so the Jedi Temple, and, you know, they said that it's going to pick up immediately following The Force Awakens, and we see the moment where she hands Luke the lightsaber. So, but with that, she gets it back very clearly because she's seen throughout the rest of the footage using it, running with it, fighting with it, which at one point we see her using it against three people, a three-on-one, with some sort of stick weaponry that they are fighting with her against, and that makes me think the Knights of Ren at some point. And, you know, when we talked about the first trailer breakdown, I think that, you know, she and Luke spend almost the entire film training on Octo at the end, and then the First Order decides that they're going to invade, and led by Kylo and the Knights of Ren, and we see her running on what appears to still be Octo toward the end of the thing at night, holding the lightsaber ignited. So I think that I'm feeling more confident about that prediction, everything we see, which I would be excited to see that, because I think, you know, I want to see Luke Skywalker do some damage to stuff. I think seeing him, you know, seeing Rey fighting feverishly and then Luke just kind of comes in and owns would be just do everything to my little fanboy nerd heart. You see Kylo also in a mass combat situation fighting two people with some sort of staff. And there was a quick shot, and I missed it the first like three times I watched it, or two times I watched it. On the third time, one of the props that they show is actually Kylo Ren's helmet crushed.
Yeah.
Which was interesting to me. So I want to see what happens with him. His scar looks really cool. It's like running down his neck. So he's definitely going to have his mask off for most of the film. I think you don't give somebody that cool of a visual thing without showing it off. And then we get the Finn storyline. He clearly comes out of his back to suit at some point. He's infiltrating a First Order base. I think they're finally going to bring him in conflict with Captain Phasma. So, you know, he's infiltrating Brienne of Tarth. So they're finally going to bring him into conflict with her, which is going to be super interesting to me. And then obviously we get to see Poe play a central part in what I have now dubbed Hoth 2. That's literally what it says in my notes. So
it's,
I think that
so clearly Hoth 2.
It is. Hoth 2 Electric anymore. Boogaloo. They're not. They're so not. But no. So I think the biggest stuff we saw and got some insight into was obviously Rey and Luke on Octo, the Jedi planet. And the other thing that was really cool to me, and then I'll stop rambling, was they're very clearly doing more animatronics, which in my mind is the right way to go. You've got all the casino aliens that are all animatronic. You've got the little penguin-like animals that seem to be on Octo with Luke, which are super cool and super cute. So I'm excited to see this. It's gotten my appetite going. I'm basically going to watch the story trailer, and then I'm done ingesting Star Wars stuff until the film comes out. So I couldn't be possibly more hyped for this.
There was also they also released a trailer, Star Wars tangentially related, not even tangentially related, very clearly related, for the Battlefront 2 game. They called it Behind the Story. And I thought it was interesting. You know, I've talked about it on the show, and you can go back and listen to it. I think it was even before the E3. It was a celebration when they first let out what the Battlefront 2 story was going to be. And I'm very skeptical on this idea of playing as the Empire. I'm still not sold on people being really willing to do that. But I do kind of think their overarching points that they make in it are interesting. It is true that we don't know what happens after Return of the Jedi, and there's some, you know, it's going to be cool to, I guess, see that. And they are right that we've never really seen the inner workings of the Empire, and I think that that's why they wanted to make this game and make that be the story. But, you know, the fact that we've never seen the inner workings of the Empire, that's by design. You know, evil with a face is not evil because it's hard to see somebody and you know, immediately think that they're evil. That's why stormtroopers wear helmets, so that you don't feel bad about Luke killing them. Like, that's the basic idea. So I'm still not sold on this, but it was an interesting defense of the story, and it was an interesting look into kind of what they're trying to do. So I definitely recommend going and watching that YouTube Battlefront 2 Behind the Story.
Yeah, and that's kind of the direction they've been going with. Almost like 60% of the new EU stuff that they're doing, it's Lords of the Sith, where you're following Vader and the Emperor basically surviving an assassination. Yeah, it's the book Tarkin, which is one of the best of the new canon, which is all about Grand Moff Tarkin thwarting some rebels. So it's really that's the direction they're going. So I think that they clearly like to talk about it, and they've had some success with it. So again, for me, because I am average to below average at first person shooters, incorporating a story mode is what I need in my life.
Absolutely.
Guys, that brings us to our favorite segment of the week. Your favorite segment, my favorite segment, your grandmother's favorite segment. Don't sleep on it. So, Ray, what can the good folks not sleep on this week?
So, last week I talked about the Tour de France. I thought it was over because of a big crash. Turns out it's not over, and some crazy stuff's happening, and it's super interesting. It's going to be interesting this last week. So, I watched the Tour de France. I love the Tour de France, and I don't care that other people hate it. And that there are literally three Americans in the race, and all of them are like 3 hours back. I got it. Don't care. Tour de France is fun. Watch Tour de France. But my other don't sleep that I don't feel nearly as strongly about as I do the Tour de France is the strain, which this is how I'll describe the strain to you. It was interesting the first season. It has gotten progressively worse from there. It's not great. but it's summer and there aren't many shows out, and it at least has new episodes. And if you're already done watching Glow on Netflix, then you want to watch some vampire stuff. Glow's not vampire, but Glow's really good. You should watch Glow. I guess maybe that should be my don't sleep. Anyway, whatever.
It's fine.
Whatever. It's got some decent action. It's ridiculous enough to be entertaining. The strain is. So, yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It's worth your time in this kind of lull of content we have in the summer.
Yeah, you started talking about it. I haven't watched the show. I've actually read the first two books that the show is based on, and I feel the same way about the books that you feel about the show. You know, the first season or first book is actually really interesting. It does some really interesting things, and then you know, the author clearly is just grasping at straws and like, oh, I didn't think this was going to be successful, so yeah, now I've got to tell absolutely a trilogy here. So yeah, it slowly degenerates into just real, real bad, real, real fast in that second book. But my don't sleep is it's a YouTube clip. So NPR does these small desk concerts where they bring artists into their offices, and they have them do a concert in one of their offices. Like, it's just a small desk concert, very literally. And so they just released their most recent one. I think it was a couple of days ago. And it was Chance the Rapper. And he did a really, really cool performance of his song Juke Jam, which if you haven't heard Juke Jam, check it out. It's really, really cool. And then he does this poem that he wrote literally on the drive to do the small desk concert. And then he ends it with a cover of a Stevie Wonder song. Yeah. And so it's just a really cool experience. It's like a 12-minute deal. So if you like music, if you like Chance the Rapper, if you like unique musical experiences, then don't sleep on Chance the Rapper's NPR Small Desk Concert. It's on YouTube right now, put on by All Songs Considered.
Two things. First of all, Tiny Desk. Secondly, sorry, the pedant in me couldn't handle that for much longer. The second thing is, was Biebs there?
Biebs was not there.
Oh, that's unfortunate. The only Biebs song I've... Actually, that's not true. I like Despacito. Is that a Biebs song, though?
I don't think so. I think Biebs is going to be the great feature man for the next few years.
I got down on that Despacito at a wedding this summer, man. That's a song to dance to.
I am unsurprised that Ray got down to Despacito. This summer. Well, guys, don't sleep on Tiny Desk, Chance the Rapper. Look it up right now.
I'll give you two more that were good from that series. I think both of these were from that series. The first is Hozier, who did the Take Me to Church, but he does you should listen to that album, that Take Me to Church. Take Me to Church is like the seventh best song on that album. And he does a song on there, which is fantastic, and he's amazing. And then there was one that they did with T-Pain, but without the auto-tune. And your boy can actually sing.
He can.
And it was deeply confusing to me. Why is he using auto-tune if he can act? Like, I know, I get why Kanye uses auto-tune. Makes perfect sense. But he could sing. Like, what was... Anyway, but those were two that I love. But you're right. The whole thing is interesting. And I have no idea how I didn't see the Chance one. But I will definitely be watching that because Chance is my boy.
Chance is the truth. But guys, thank you so much for listening this week. If you made it this far, you clearly like something we've got going on. So if you like it, share it with somebody you like. If you don't like it, share it with somebody you don't like. But guys, thank you so much for listening. Again, you can find the show on Twitter. We're at Two Woke Nerds. Send us an email, twowokenerdspod@gmail.com. Ray, where can the good folks find you on the interwebs?
At RM Summerlin on the Tweety Machine.
And you can find me on Twitter. I am @GH Goodridge. And until next time, guys, stay woke.
Stay woke.